that you said?
Texas Talking.
Gonna hoop upside your head.
Texas Talking.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Tribcast focusing on the University of Texas Texas Tribune poll. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton. Joining me are the poll's co-directors, Darren Shaw and Jim Henson.
Hey, man.
How you doing?
And Josh Blank, manager of polling and research.
How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us, man.
Now, obviously, you guys have been doing this poll with the Tribune for a while now. But the latest poll that's coming out this week, or came out this week, I think we're airing this on Friday, is different than the ones that have come before it in some respects. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. The main change is essentially that we increased the sample size. I think we were running at about 800 respondents per poll, and now we're up to roughly 1,200. We like to keep it there. The main reason for that is that Texas is a big, diverse state. There's a lot of interest in some of the subgroups that exist. So, you know, most notably, I suppose, with 1,200 respondents, we get a very decent size of Latinos. And might be able to say some things about the Latino opinionation and attitudes that we wouldn't have been able to say with a smaller sample. And we do a lot of work, obviously, on elections. And so when you break down 800 people into Republican and Democratic primary subsamples, it's nice to have a larger overall end so that you can be a little more precise and confident in what you're saying about the party electorates.
But you don't plan on getting bigger in future polls?
Well, you never know. I think, we would always like to have more. This might be the most we can drain out of the Texas Trib resources at this point. The other thing to mention is that we're also presenting a... and this will be something that will put people to sleep outside of maybe those who have subscriptions with the American Association of Public Opinion Research. But we're presenting two ways of calculating the margin of error. Because what we do is an online sample using a matching with propensity score methodology, it's not quite the same as a traditional phone line probability sample. And it requires, if you go through the math, requires a slight adjustment of the margin of error that you can attribute to it. So we're presenting both the standard margin of error and what we think might be a more appropriate margin of error associated with the poll. So that's for the technophiles out there.
I assume that's all everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, part of the idea is, we've started from the beginning to try to be transparent. We've talked about, this has been, even before the partnership with the Tribune, we had thought about it as kind of a public service. We make all the data sets available. We've tried to be sort of stay on the edge of these kind of best practices. And so this was trying to stay in front of that to some degree.
All right, well, can we jump right into what the findings were?
No, I want to talk a little bit more about the margin of error.
We start with the marquee fight here is the Perry versus Abbott matchup. It looks like, as the uninitiated, not diving too deep in it, glance, it looks like just Perry's way ahead of Abbott. Is this just great news for Perry? Is there sort of more to it than that?
Well, Josh and I wrote a piece earlier in the week, and the three of us have talked about it a lot. In our view, there's a whole lot more to it. I mean, I think... anybody who thinks that's exactly what the state of the race is right now is missing a lot of subtleties in the other items that we put on the poll. We had, lots of items, for example, about whether you had favorable or unfavorable impressions of Greg Abbott. And one of the things that comes out of that is that Abbott is still largely undefined among a lot of Texans, including a big chunk of Republican voters.
Yeah, I think that the main thing I would point out, and we say this a lot, and I think it might frustrate some people who want us to come down solidly on this is good news for candidate A versus candidate B, but we often come away saying that there's good news for both people. And that's not because we equivocate, although we do our share of that. It's because it's true. I mean, in this poll, I think if you're in the Perry camp, you'd say, the guy's been governor since 2001. That's a long time, and it's a long time to accumulate positions and votes that can alienate people. And people just get tired of public officials after a certain period of time. And yet, his numbers here look pretty good. He's still above water on fave-unfave. He still holds a lead amongst both all voters and Republican primary voters. And so, maybe he's not as damaged by the presidential primary process as some people think. On the other hand, as Jim said, Abbott's fave-unfave is very strong. And there's a ton of people, as you might expect a year out, who are undecided. They have no idea what they're going to do. I would offer that I think should Perry and Abbott match up, or actually should Perry and almost anybody match up in a serious Republican challenge for governor. My sense is that almost all the action will be on the side of the challenger. Perry is such a defined candidate at this point that the question will be, can that alternative get known and get known positively in a way that makes him or her an effective challenge?
And I mean, Perry fatigue is still out there. I mean, it's not as big as you would think it was going to be at this point after 12 years, but it certainly exists. And we do that Perry support question where you can vote for, vote against, or wait and see. There's plenty of people who like Perry who still want to wait and see. I think it's almost 45% of those people who like Perry, something in that neighborhood. So, I mean, you know, it's not just whether Abbott's a challenger. I mean, $18 million is pretty helpful in doing sort of in reminding people how fatigued they might be. But I mean, it's going to be interesting regardless of whether it's Abbott or somebody else.
And should we be surprised that Abbott's not more known? I mean, it's not like he's not been doing things for the last many years. He sues the federal government almost every other day.
Yeah, but I mean, people don't really get up. They may like seeing that, but your average person doesn't get up and either look at their phone, or if they still, for some reason, get a newspaper, look at the newspaper and go, oh, I hope the Attorney General is suing somebody today. It's just not something that's really salient. I mean, kind of building into something Darren was saying. I mean, it's not only that people aren't decided. People aren't even at the point, in most cases, of even framing this as a race.
I think if you took a national poll and asked people in different states who their attorney general was, I'll bet Abbott would actually show up relatively pretty high. You know, maybe Florida, maybe a couple other places where the attorney general rather is in stronger positions. So in that sense, relative sense, I actually think he looks pretty good, just because I don't have any strong sense that people know who their attorney generals are.
I think the fact that he's, even with the amount of people who don't know who he is, I mean, that's probably still inflated, the people who do, because the Facebook ad buys in New York, right? All this talk about Perry Abbott that's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, there's probably, I mean, right now, asking it right when we did, we probably are actually a little bit of a high watermark for him. Not that it's not going to get higher going forward as he gets out there and maybe announces a candidacy. But, I mean, I think if we had asked this, you know, I don't know, before the new year, he might have been even lower than he is now.
And we kind of, you know, as you know, we went round and round about this. I mean, if you were to ask me and I had to really say, I have my doubts this is ever going to happen. So, and I think a lot of people think that.
Well, I think you had Abbott's spokesperson said that, oh, you know, this is just fight promoters and the media trying to hype a conflict that doesn't exist. So why do we poll this question?
Well, we are at the behest of our masters. There's a lot of interest in Republican primary politics, and given that, there's interest in this potential matchup. And, you know, we've actually, as you said, had conversations about how much information are you really getting from a question like this. And I think we sort of reconcile ourselves to it by saying, well, it's suggestive. You know, Abbott in some ways is a marker for a credible candidate who would challenge Governor Perry. And in that sense, it gives you something. But I think the three of us fall firmly in the camp that, there's just so much time between now and then that suggestive is about the best we would, you know, about the most we would put into this particular result. Right?
I was going to say, the key takeaway there is in the head-to-head matchup, of those who chose Perry, 44% had no opinion of Abbott. And of those who chose Abbott, 31% of them had no opinion of Abbott. So just think about that and think about how much that question's really telling you about what the race is going to look
and
like.
And this is why, you know, when you accommodate, you know, the desire for a simpler result, you put it at the end so we gather the data on the other, you know, sort of more isolated judgments of the candidates, throw this in afterwards, and then you can triangulate in the way that Josh just did with some of the other data.
Well, then, shall we move on to a more of an issue, I guess, and get into guns?
Sure.
That was another big thing. You know, I was surprised. You hear a lot of candidates. I think this we were talking earlier about the SD6 race, where both candidates, Democrats, were like, oh, well, you know, we support hunting and, you know, having guns and stuff. But, of course, it looks like in this poll that hunting is not the main reason why Texans have guns. You know, so what are Texans' attitudes?
I love this. I mean, this is great. So, I mean, we had, you know, so of those who own guns, I think 44% that, you know, protection was the number one issue. But what I also really, really liked about this was the vast majority who have like 2 to 100 guns. So, I mean, I like the idea that among these people who have these for protection, I mean, they must just be all over the house.
Did you have ranges? It's like, do you have 2 to 100? 100 to 107?
We had 1, 2 to 5, and I think more than 5.
Yeah. No,
then,
we did.
You know, and then prefer not to say, which was a very popular option also.
Yeah. That was one of the things that was really fun about doing this, is that we were able to ask a range of questions about guns, and then we also asked some demographic information. Although, as Josh says, there was, what, about 12-13% of the people that just didn't want to tell you anything about their gun ownership.
Yeah. And this is 2 to 100 in your home, not on your person, right?
Yeah, unless you're very tall.
Yeah.
So what else? What else jumped out at you, Josh?
I mean, for me personally, you know, they're the top line results, but the stuff that I was really interested in was sort of the gender gap, and also the Tea Party to sort of Republican identifier gap, which is what I thought was really interesting. You know, there's a piece out recently that was talking about whether guns would be a new you know, sort of gender gap issue. It would be a women's issue. And I mean, at least our poll seems to indicate that it is. So, I mean, you know, 48% of women think that gun laws should be more strict compared to 40% of men. 45% of women favor semi-automatic weapon ban, and 52% favor a high-capacity magazine ban, and only 34% and 39% of men favor those. So, I mean, the gap is actually clearly there, which is, you know, kind of falls in line with, I guess, the party breakdowns that we've been seeing recently in some of the fights.
Well, I think that's the big question, and this is something that gets a lot of attention in academic circles and less so in popular circles, which is a lot of the gender gap is a party gap. Women are just more likely to be Democratic than men, and so and that gap ranges from 6 to, you know, 12 points, kind of depending upon, you know, what time we're talking about and whether we're talking about all adults versus registered voters versus people who show up on election day. And so, you know, these differences, I think the one where you really see a difference beyond the fact that women simply identify more Democratic than men is actually on the ban on high-capacity magazines. And I think, you know, from my perspective, what's interesting is that there's sort of a knowledge of guns and a comfort with guns. You know, the gun culture, I think, is probably the appropriate word, although people don't quite understand what we mean by that, in Texas. And so I think what you end up getting then is... it's not that Texans oppose gun control measures. I think what you find is that most of them think that there are adequate gun control measures on the books. They're simply not enforced. And they're, you know, once you say, would you like more, they tend to be reticent to say, well, yes, we should have more regulation of, you know, in their view, ineffective laws. And, you know, and it plays into, again, as Josh suggested, this Tea Party strain, which is just suspicious of the government's ability to do anything effectively. And, you know, also kind of plays into the notion that they may have an agenda beyond simply curbing violence. I think all that's running around in,
although
here,
background checks is the one exception to that.
Right, they're not trying to take this back to the wild, wild west, right? I mean, because 78% support requiring criminal and mental health background checks on all gun purchases.
Right, and there's and we asked one of the items, you know.
Yeah, but 42% of Tea Party Republicans oppose criminal and mental.
Right.
I mean that's a huge percentage, given that this is supposed to be the consensus issue out there.
Well, what is the Tea Party Republican versus non Tea Party Republican breakdown?
That's a good question.
It's about I think
24 Tea Party, 19 Republican. That's what
right. When we give people the option of splitting off a Tea Party, and it's a rough approximation, but we asked people if the Tea Party was a party.
It's essentially a ballot question.
Yeah.
If there were, it's a House race in your district, and there were a Republican, a Democrat, and a Tea Party candidate running, for whom would you vote? And we've asked this question 3 or 4 years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've consistently gotten very high numbers saying, you know, they would vote for a Tea Party candidate. And so when you run what we call the cross tabs, and we'll refer to Tea Party Republicans, those are people who said in a three-way matchup in a House race, they'd support a Tea Party candidate.
And so this is not, when you're citing sort of their views, that's not a fringe, that's not just 42% of a small group.
No, it's a pretty big, you're looking at probably in the range of, you know, half of Republican identifiers, sometimes more, sometimes a little bit less, depending on the poll.
Yeah, the Tea Party is not, there's a sense if you watch cable news shows, at least beyond Fox, that, you know, Tea Party has become a dirty word, and it's very unpopular. That's not true. That's not true nationally. What you've seen is an intensification of the opposition to the Tea Party. But the Tea Party itself is not viewed unfavorably. It's basically a polarizing group now in a way that it wasn't when it first came out. And in a state like Texas, it seems a very credible, viable option. And as Josh was saying, there's very strong differences between Tea Party supporters versus, what would you call them, mainstream Republicans, I guess?
Yeah, yeah, we call them like mainline.
Mainline or non-Tea Party. Yeah. I mean,
old school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would that term
OG, yeah, OG Republican. Yeah.
Back to the one thing that stood out to me, and of course I mostly cover higher education here, but the sort of difference in the openness to guns on K-12 campuses versus guns on college campuses. And maybe can you talk a little bit about that and why that might be?
Well, you know, I'm not sure exactly what it is. It does seem to me that the guns on campus issue has become a bit more split among partisan lines. I mean, I think the guns on campus thing has been adopted by conservatives and Republicans in Texas. It's become identified as a partisan issue by activists. And so you see an almost even split there. And that kind of goes back to the gun culture kind of baseline that Darren was referring to. I just think you have a higher level of kind of reflexive comfort with guns in Texas, even among some Democrats.
Yeah, I think there's also a difference in asking about, arming theoretically responsible K-12 teachers who've gone through training and all these sorts of programs versus giving some, 19, 21-year-old on a college campus the right to carry around a gun. I mean,
Well, you couldn't be 19, right?
Yeah, I think you have to be 21, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So old enough to drink and carry a gun on campus.
Right.
But that might be deeper into the issue than people that debate it really get.
Are you speaking from experience, yeah. Higher education beat reporter?
No, I'm just saying, if you were to poll people's knowledge of concealed handgun laws.
That's probably true. Although what's interesting to me here is that in the past we've seen a distinction between K-12 versus higher ed. In other words, people are less reluctant to allow guns of any sort in a K-12 context. And in this particular, the way the questions were framed this time, we asked about allowing more teachers to carry concealed weapons in public schools. That's the K-12 piece. And that gets, 54% support, 34% strongly. And I think as Josh was suggesting, there's an assumption that, okay, we're talking about people who've gone through traditional training, and so, you're talking about the teachers being in a position to do that. And again, there's sort of comfort with gun training and use of handguns in Texas. The counterpoint question, which would be the higher ed question, is guaranteeing the right of faculty, staff, and students to carry concealed weapons. And there's reduced support for that, which initially surprised me just because we tend to get more support for gun availability on college campuses, where presumably you're talking about adults and you've had some high-profile incidents, compared to K-12. But it's clearly, I think, the breadth of people that we're referring to in the higher ed context here. It's not just faculty, it's students, staff, et cetera. I think that's what drops support for that proposition down.
Well, we could also be making it more complicated than it needs to be, though.
We have a record of doing that.
It may also just be that, we're talking about elementary schools. The most high profile case recently was in an elementary school.
Right.
Could
it be a matter of timing? Could it be at a high watermark?
We were a little,
Well, that's true about all these questions. Yeah. I mean, if we were to ask all these gun questions, in 6 months,
Right, it'll have tapered down, and I wonder how far.
That's just a problem.
I don't think that's implausible about
that's
the
just
roles,
a problem. But. That's just a problem with the crowd, which is you ask questions that are in the news.
Yeah.
So you're always, in a position, unless you ask questions that, have no reflection on the current public debate. In which case, you get a real clean measure of opinion, but nobody cares. We're trying to
And as you always say, it's a snapshot in time,
yeah.
Right? So, it is reflective of what's going on right now.
Well, one of the things going on at the legislature is that sort of the narrative has been that there's this sort of bipartisan agreement that water is going to be the big issue, and everyone's going to be dealing with water. But it looks like from this that might not be as bipartisan as people seem to be saying.
Well, I wouldn't say it's not a polarizing issue. to say the least. But we wrote about.
I myself am anti-water.
Yeah, we wrote about this recently, and not.
You are drinking a.
I see. That's right. It's part of my boycott.
Right. Come back when you have a statewide iced tea plan for
right.
you, pal.
Oh, that's funny.
No, what were you saying?
I was thinking about iced tea. No, but we ask about the most important problems in Texas. Every poll, And, you know, water is always sort of sitting down there around 3%. I'm sure it's like the same people who are kind of, you know, I don't know who they are, but they, for them, water is the most important problem. And even with all this talk going on in the legislature and all these events, and, you know, we showed up at the Trib Live and there were, you know, people sort of sitting on top of each other to hear about water. And, you know, we'd get the poll back and I was thinking, oh, did water jump up? No, 3%. And then, if anything, you know, you look at the partisan breakdowns. I mean, my takeaway is that people are kind of ambivalent, you know, it's sort of, even all this talk, and we ask, you know, should water be a top priority? And basically, 62% of Democrats said it should be a top priority or one of the top priorities. 48% of Republicans said that. So, I mean, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, I mean, that's a good way to put it. I mean, I think, you know, we see this in some other areas with some other issues. You know, if you put the issue in front of somebody and say, hey, you know, what do you think? You think we ought to be good with water? People go, yeah, we probably should do something about water, but they're not getting up in the morning thinking about it.
It's to me, it's an interesting time to ask the question because you're coming off several years of intense drought. You're coming off, or you're in the midst of a legislative session in which this has been identified as an important issue, and yet it's not that the public doesn't care. It's just that compared to other relevant, in-your-face type issues, where presumably there might be more immediate ramifications. I mean, the water shortages are there. You know, there's rationing, and certainly in the ranching parts of the state, there's some real serious implications. But we are not responding to the elite conversation yet, would be the fancy way to put it. It has not trickled down, so to speak, you know, to a place where the public is really engaged with the issue and the policy, you know, questions.
Well, and there's other questions in the survey that back that up, because we basically, you know, I always think about this, you know, you can say something like, is water important? Everyone says, yeah, you know, is education important? Yeah, you know, is gun control important? Sure. But then when you put all those things against each other and you talk about competing priorities, then you see what people really care about. When we ask people whether they wanted to restore cuts made in public education and human services or limit government or, you know, lower taxes or provide public funds for infrastructure like water, which are sort of the big things that people are talking about with the remaining money that's left, then water gets, you know, 14%. Because, you know, education's more important or lowering taxes is more important or, you know.
Well, and in terms of, yeah, what Darren was saying, in terms of the people that are, you know, the issues that are in people's face and that they view through a powerful partisan lens are the things that really then drive that conversation. So if you break it down to party, you know, water just kind of washes out, if you will.
Nice.
And then, you know, what you're left with is Democrats wanting to restore the cuts and Republicans wanting to keep cutting.
And is that, I mean, is that really the issue that bubbles to the top that people are talking about? Like, what is the issue that people seem to wake up thinking about?
Well, it depends
on who
your party is.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a Republican, you know, based on our numbers, you're waking up still think, you know, the important problems you're thinking about have to do with immigration and border security.
This has been a resilient and robust finding across the tenure of this poll. This is, of course, there's two separate items we asked. What's the most important problem facing the nation? And it's Texans are in line with the rest of the country with respect to what they think the national priorities are. But then we asked what's the most important problem facing the state. And we have consistently gotten, if you combine border security and illegal immigration, it tops the list almost every time. And that
it's
even
49% in this last one.
And it
of
trumps
Republicans.
Of Republicans.
And
it,
well,
yeah, sorry.
And it, but even overall, it still, I believe, trumps unemployment, jobs, and the economy, the combined numbers for those.
Right.
And that was true.
Well, at the bottom of the Great Recession, they competed a little bit. If you could bunch up economy and unemployment
really
and immigration and border
for
security, and they kind of went back and forth among the two. But they were consistently the top two.
Huh. Well, so what do people think we should do about illegal immigration and border security?
No, that's a different question. I think that what you see is this, I believe, in some ways mirrors the conversation you see, especially amongst Republicans, which is there's, you know, in the Republican circles, there's this notion of decoupling, right? Which is you need to take care of border security first, and then we can have a conversation about pathway to citizenship. What's tricky about that decoupling, I think, from the Republican point of view, is there's fairly significant agreement that there, amongst Republicans, that there ought to be some sort of pathway to citizenship. That's less true, although it's somewhat true in the national numbers. So you could argue that this is something, you know, that Texans are particularly sort of amenable to, this idea that, you know, you got to do something with this group of people who are here in the country. But even amongst Republicans, you see that. Right? And this is, I think, why people like George W. Bush and John Cornyn and others have taken these sort of more, how would you put it, moderate positions, I guess, with respect to how you deal with the resident illegal immigration population compared to some of the national Republicans.
Although Cornyn's been making noises that he may be a little less moderate on that more recently. Right. I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, we were talking about whether elite opinion is leading, elite opinion is driving public opinion on water and noticing that it's not. It's interesting to look and see how the divisions in the conversation among elites in the Republican Party at the national and state level that Darren's referring to, is still not quite resolved among the base either. So, if you look at, we have an item on comprehensive immigration reform, 44% of Republicans in this poll opposed comprehensive immigration reform. That was about where it was a year ago. Even though in the intervening year, there's certainly been a lot more conversation of the types that Darren is talking about among national Republicans. I'm not sure we're really seeing that resonate in any particularly visible way yet. And it is, really kind of the more conservative wing of the Republican Party that's anchoring that, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, when we're kind of talking about these elite base questions, I mean, I always sort of think to myself, well, I look at that Tea Party question. And part of it is that, I think about the type of people who, given a choice, would support support a Tea Party candidate over a Republican candidate. And I kind of think these people overlap pretty strongly with the engaged group of voters who are going to show up in a primary. So when you talk about why is, Ted Cruz going out there and saying, basically he's against most types of immigration reform, well, look at a standing among Tea Party identifiers in the state, and you'll see why, because they are in the same camp.
Well, can we talk about Ted Cruz's standing? Obviously, maybe among the elites, it's every major newspaper is in a profile of Ted Cruz at this point and how, polarizing a figure he is in Washington, D.C. How has that played to the folks here in Texas?
Oh, it's played great.
Yeah, I mean, he's still in very good shape among the people he's paying attention to.
Well, even overall, Cruz is at 49% favorable and 28% unfavorable. And there's two things to note about those numbers. The first is that's a very high, net positive rating. And secondly, there's only 17% of people who said they don't have an opinion of Ted Cruz. Now, this is a guy who's been on the statewide scene. I mean, he was Solicitor General, but a year. Essentially, and his numbers. If
we already talked about what the attorney general registers,
right?
Not as sexy of a position
that's
as
why we
solicitor
have Sean
general.
The podcast, so we can crack those deadpan solicitor general jokes.
That's right. Right. So here you go. Here's Cornyn at 21%, who can't offer a rating of him of John Cornyn compared to 17 for Cruz. So this is a guy who one is really widely known for someone who's so new to the scene, and he's known pretty positively. And if you look at the fave-unfave numbers amongst Republicans...
Oh, it's crazy.
I've done a couple interviews suggesting this. I'm not quite sure what it is the sort of national media don't get about Ted Cruz's position. He's come out as sort of rattling the cage of one of the most unpopular institutions in the country, the U.S. Congress, and they seem to think that's a real risky political move. And he's taken a set of positions that are very consistent with, his constituency in Texas. So outside the fact they might find it distasteful, just from a purely practical political point of view, I'm not exactly sure why we're supposed to be...
And his numbers have been going up here. I mean, that's the other thing. We asked about him in our October poll, and he's gained 3 points overall since then, but he's gained 9 points amongst Tea Party Republicans in that same period. So, I mean, whatever he's doing is working for him. I mean,
it's no wonder there are reports that Senator Cornyn is kind of following him around in the halls.
Yeah. Well, also, looks, I mean, we're talking about immigration and border security stuff. It looks like those voters who vote on that issue are particularly moving in his direction.
Well, and as we said, I mean, that's a lot of voters here. Right? I mean, if 49% of Republicans think immigration and border security is the most important problem in Texas, I'm sure that's as consistent as the numbers are across the board. The fact that he's, and these people aren't for comprehensive immigration reform for the most part, the fact that he's out there, being at the forefront of the opposition for that, I mean, it's a good place to be in.
Well, and going back to, I feel like I can't do a Tribcast without making this kind of point that Darren made in a slightly different way, which is that you know, somehow people think that if they write negatively about a conservative in the New York Times and the Washington Post, that that somehow is going to hurt them, when it actually has the opposite effect.
Yeah, I've just been kind of amazed at, you know, the outrage that he would dare to do some things in the Senate and violate their protocol. And my response is always, and what, bring the gears of this wonderful machine to a grinding halt? I mean, you know, it's not exactly clear what the downside is. Now, if you're talking about the old days where, you know, the powers that be could deny him committee positions or, you know, marginalize him or not provide him with resources, say, in a re-election fight, but it hasn't been that way in a long time.
Well,
in,
not, not only that, it's the opposite, and that Cornyn is sidling up to him and trying to bring him along, right?
Well, I think it's reasonable to say that Cruz is the marker for conservatism, right? And so in some ways, your record is judged against Cruz's. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're looking to avoid primary fights, if you're looking to define yourself as conservative, then, you know, Cruz is relevant here. I mean, that's clear in the numbers.
And right now he's got a real feel. It seems to me he's got a real feel for it in the way that Perry did a couple of years ago. I mean, he's tapped into his base pretty well, and he's tapped into the image, I think, that he wants to project. He's doing it, and it's working for him. And, you know, a critical story in the New York Times is just gravy.
And you notice that the critical stories are almost all about positions he's taken or not being deferential enough. They're not critical stories saying he is not competent, he is not thoughtful. You know, they don't like his positions, but that's not really the criticism. And so long as he avoids, you know, the kinds of, you know, statements that brand him as not being serious, as being...
He doesn't want an oops moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Although it doesn't seem like that's necessarily hurt Perry in Texas too much.
Yeah, although I think...
We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the media template is if you're a Tea Party candidate, if you have these sorts of positions, that there must be something wrong with you. You must not be that, you know, thoughtful or bright. And I think what they're finding about it, Ted is going to frustrate them, I think, the way that Rand Paul has frustrated them, which is, well, you know, he doesn't seem to be making the gaffes and the misstatements and that allow us to kind of ridicule him. And I think that's, you know, that in some ways, I think that's on the national media.
Well, and to the extent that he has, it's about communists at Harvard Law School, so...
Yeah.
He's still a smart guy. I mean...
Of course, I don't think you guys pulled communists at Harvard Law School, but maybe on the next one.
We're hoping to do that in the next one. I think we're going to get some big surprises.
That's in the hopper.
There's a pocket of support for them here in Texas that people don't know about, but they're not armed.
All right. Well, that's something to look forward to. Darren, Jim, Josh, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was fishing for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the extra effort, Reeve Hamilton of the Texas Tribune Reporter.
On behalf of our producer, Todd, I'd also say thank you to him. This is Reeve. Thanks for listening to our special edition of the Tribcast.
Texas Talking.